Welcome back to another episode of Stock Talk. I'm Kat Franz, COO of the Independent Professional Seed Association, here with, of course, Todd Martin, our CEO, and Keith Peltier from ProSeed. Thanks for joining us today, Keith.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Keith, I'll tell you, you know, normally we always start out Stock Talk talking, you know, just a lot about what's going on in the world and stuff like that, you know, but I was trying to think, there's been, you know, so many developments over the last 2 weeks. I'm not even sure where we can start on anything in between politics and all kinds of stuff. I will tell you, you know, we filed some comments yesterday on the 45Z legislation of the Independent Inflation Reduction Act, which actually we hope will help, you know, corn and soybean farmers with regards to anybody that's working in the ethanol markets and trying to lower their carbon intensity. So we're trying to get that, make sure it's focused on domestic production rather than foreign production. So that's pretty good from that standpoint. And
that'd be great. Course, you know, the carbon intensity, that, you know, that's a wide open ball game. But, you know, some of the laws just give the incentive to the companies rather than to the farmers. So anything you do to help them out is good.
Well, and that's exactly what we were trying to get to, is make sure that it is going to the American farmers that actually go in and do the production. So a lot of things happening there, but football season's about to kick off, man. Bison going to do this year? Are Bison going to be any good?
They are. I predict we'll be in the top four teams. We, you know, South Dakota has a good team again, South Dakota State University, but we could be in the championship game with a little bit of luck. You have to have a little luck, but we're going to have a good team.
Well, I'll tell you what, the you know, I was kind of shocked, and you know, I know you're friends with Terry Schultz down there in Madison, yeah, South Dakota sometimes, but you know, I got so used to the Bison winning the national championship every year, and now the Jackrabbits came up. I'm like, what the heck?
They've won the last two, but we've got 9 out of 11, so we're a little ahead of them yet.
That's pretty good. So do y'all make bets around that? Just about
we do. I am kind of a standard bet with him, and I've won quite a bit, but I've been losing lately. So
I understand that. I have a good friend down at LSU that we had a standing bet for a number of years until I went on a really long losing streak of the Arkansas LSU game. It was all based around a bottle of scotch. And, you know, the loser had to present the bottle of scotch in a nice gift wrap box and sign it, you know, praise the other team. And I think I got about 6 bottles and he's got about 15.
And you had to do it standing on your head and in the parking lot. Just a minute, 1 second here. Gibson.
I think Keith has a dog like we do.
I think so too.
The best part about, you know, working from home and working from your own office is you get to have the dogs.
Yeah. Well, best part or worst part, not sure.
I bring my dog to work every day because my wife won't have him in the house by herself.
Hey, I got to tell you, we were just talking about that. So, of course, Catherine and I both have dogs, and working from home, we've got them. And when I go to the office every single day, the dogs go with us to the office too. Yeah. So, I mean, they get really mad if they get left at home. So,
same. And he's a great companion, but he's a great doorbell announcer. But that's the bad thing about him too.
Well, understand. Keith, the reason we wanted to talk to you today is on Stock Talk, we talk a lot about issues. But, you know, one of the things that we really want to dig down into is – our independent seed companies, because there's some great stories there. Companies that have been around for a really long time that have had great beginnings, multi-generational companies. And, you know, over the past few weeks, and we highlighted this in the Ipsa newsletter last go round, a lot of good stuff happening up at ProSeed. And y'all did some really cool stuff at NDSU, and you had a good conversation about your dad and agriculture in general.
Yes.
And so really and truly, what I wanted to dive into just to start is tell us about the start of ProSeed, how it got started, and tell me about, you know, the family. And
sure.
Just give everybody a good flavor for how y'all got in this business.
All right. Well, my family's been in the grain business since 1906. And I'm a minority shareholder in the family business, but they've always been very progressive. It's now called the Arthur Companies. And in 1975, from 1975 to 1985, we owned half of Interstate Seed, which, and if you're my age, you remember Interstate Seed. If you're younger, you probably don't, but they were a regional or sunflower seed company. We owned half of them. And in 1991, the breeder for Interstate decided to agree to disagree with Vanderhave, the current owner, on how to do sunflower breeding. So he quit, and he asked our company if we wanted to join him. So we were the money half, and he was the brains half. Tragically, he got, the year after he started the company, he got liver cancer, went in the hospital, never came out. So we had the big powwow, do we want to be in the seed business? We wanted to be in the seed business. We wanted to be in value added. He had some good stuff in the oven. So we hired another plant breeder and kept going. At that time, I was managing the elevator in Harvey for our family business. And part of my job was to be the marketing guy for the seed company. And I did that for, and I took more responsibility after the plant breeder died. And in 1996, I had the opportunity to buy the elevator shares myself, which I exercised. And when we were with the Arthur companies, we had a wholesale fertilizer and seed company, and those salesmen doubled as salesmen for seed, fertilizer, and chemical. Well, fertilizer and chemical is a completely different animal in the seed business. One, you're selling value, the other, you're just selling volume. So we hired a couple of our own guys, and initially we're in sunflowers. I knew we weren't going to survive just in sunflowers. So in 96, we kind of got into canola, corn, soybeans, and alfalfa, kind of one crop each year. And we started out, you know, we were 95% sunflowers and canola and like 5% corn and beans. So when I had the opportunity, you know, we knew Roundup was going to really be something special, the trait, but we wanted it in canola more than anything else because we weren't selling any corn or soybeans hardly. So I got lined up and we got the canola license from Monsanto at the time to do canola. And they said, hey, do you want corn and soybeans too? So I said, sure. And we, you know, we weren't selling anything. Of course, now you can't get those kind of licenses just like that. But so then we, you know, we just kept plugging away. We kept adding sales guys. And as the market switched, we switched. It was a wonderful time to be in the seed business in 96. That's when the traits came in. Pioneer had dominated the market. They were slow to switch into the traits. So, you know, we were able to gain some market share fairly quickly. And, you know, we started out with a Nissan Pathfinder and no trucks, no nothing, a third of a warehouse in Amenia, North Dakota, and, you know, just kept kind of gradually adding staff, gradually adding infrastructure. And now, you know, we have 9, 10 sales guys that cover North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota. We have a couple nice warehouses and a, you know, fleet of vehicles all over the place. Got the, all the appropriate licenses. And about 10 years ago, the sunflower business was the most glamorous part of the business because we got to go all over the world. We got to go to China. We got to go to Argentina, France, Ukraine. But it was the least profitable part of the business. So we sold that about 10 years ago and just started focusing on, you know, selling out to our corn and bean customers. So that's the short version.
Well, you know, it's funny because first off, I'm amazed, you know, with roots in this for 118 years, that's pretty astounding. I mean, it really is. And, you know, but I can certainly understand where you're coming from with regards to chemicals versus seed and actually selling volume versus value.
Yeah.
I can tell you, and I'm very safe at saying this because I know that, you know, my friends in the Mississippi Delta that I used to work with are probably not going to be listening to this podcast because they don't have any, we don't have any companies or members down there. But wow, I worked in the Mississippi Delta around Clarksdale, Mississippi for part of my career. And I started out in ag chem sales before I moved over to the seed section. And I can tell you, we never want the seed business to be like ag chem sales because in ag chem sales, it was a volume loss leader type thing. You sold betting on the back end of what you're going to be paid at the end of the year. Yeah. And man, you just can't run seed like that. You know, so I mean, it was, yeah, it's when I moved over to seed and saw the difference in it. And I was actually had some seed colleagues, you know, that sold seed back before biotechnology came in. which doesn't seem like it was, you know, a whole lot of fun back then, but they were a lot more profitable than we were on the chemical side.
And I'll brag a little bit. Of course, you know, we've been in business since 1906, but my great grandmother was the first white woman born west of the Missouri River. And she was the first lady that attended at that time North Dakota Ag College in 1893. So my roots go way, way, way back.
Go way back. Well, no kidding. So tell me something. What do you think, as you're looking, I guess, at Proceed then and Proceed now, what do you think the biggest challenges are that you're facing out there? I mean, you talk about sunflowers and kind of the cool thing that you got to do, but it was not as profitable. Y'all moved that out. So obviously you faced historic challenges, you know, to be able to be here today. But what about other things that, you know, that were back then and then versus what's going on now that you think is a big challenge?
Well, you know, I think one of the challenges that everybody faces is, you know, managing our inventory, you know, trying to guess right on what the products are going to be and manage obsolescence, so on and so forth. And then a big one in my mind, you know, we have our partners out there and, you know, I like saying, you know, you have to dance with them. It's like dancing with a 500-pound gorilla. You can't get too close to them. And I think one of our biggest challenges is, you know, trying to manage through the big three and how they can kind of control the market with their trait prices and, you know, how they can really, if they want to, put us out of business, just going a little bit below our cost of production on the trait. So that's a big challenge in my mind of trying to navigate that. You know, fortunately, part of our customers like doing business with the independents such as ourselves. You know, we have somewhere 25-30% of the market, but it's really a challenge to try and keep that market share and try and grow that market share in the face of those headwinds.
So, you know, if you're looking in, you know, your primary market, and I know it's North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, you know, what do you see from an agronomic change that you've observed over the last, you know, couple of decades?
Gosh. Well, I mean, you know, North Dakota went from, you know, we're Cass County and, you know, we got three of the top five soybean counties in the country in North Dakota with Richland, Cass and Barnes and Stutzman. So that has, you know, two things. One, crop mix. The Red River Valley used to be sugar beets, wheat, you know, small grains, maybe a little sunflowers. And North Dakota once upon a time had 5 million acres of sunflowers. Now the Red River Valley looks like Iowa. It's mostly corn and beans. The only wheat you see is really a rotation crop for sugar beets. You know, we've seen the yields go from when everybody thought 30 bushels was a good yield in wheat and 100 bushels a good yield in corn to, you know, 250 is a good yield in corn. And, you know, 60, 70 is a good yield in beans, where it used to be 30. So tremendous advances in genetics and you know, and the things that go with the genetics to make yields better for farmers.
So would you say it's just because of the yield increases in corn and soybean, we're really talking about just a absolute substantial economic change that has brought about the switch in crops? Because I do remember back in my younger days, I mean, yeah, North Dakota and the Red River Valley were known for sugar beets and wheat more than anything else.
Yes, exactly. You know, so I mean, the farmers follow the money, and you know that when they figured out that 150 times five or whatever it was on corn, and you know, was yielding better, it was more money than wheat, they made the switch.
Got it. Okay, tell me about a typical day at Proceed. Besides, you know, grabbing the dog and going to the office, what is a typical day look like at Proceed? You know, what happens daily? How, you know, what are your salesmen doing? You know, what's happening around the place?
Our sales guys are all remote. So, you know, back in the day, you know, my goal is not to retire, just work a little less. And I've been doing that. We have an excellent general manager, David Blue, who's kind of worked his way up through the system, started as a sales guy, went into the sales manager position. Now he's the general sales manager, or, you know, general manager. So we've kind of evolved within the company. He's doing a better job than I was running the company, so that's a good deal for us. But you know, generally, yeah, I try and go to the office. I like to go to work, so I like to be here. I think it's important to go to the office because you learn stuff talking to the general manager, sales manager, warehouse manager. You know, stuff that you can't learn if you're not here on presence. I try and walk around the warehouse once or twice, three times a week, just to see what's going on. Another soybean warehouse, corn warehouse, just checking it out when I'm around. So I like to manage by walking around.
Walking around, making sure everybody sees, oh, the boss is here. We're going to have to do right. Understand.
I'm a believer
that.
In, you know, trying to do all the jobs once at least, you know, doing the totes, bagging the corn, throwing on the stack, and you know, now we've got a robot to do all that stuff. But evolve, I guess.
Well, that kind of brings in another question. So, man, you've gone through this for 120 years. 118 years. Lots of changes, of course, but even over the last 30, there's been a lot of changes. There's been
huge.
Genetic changes, you know, biotechnology's come in, and there's a lot of changes going on now. So I guess you mentioned robotics and what's happening with the packages. Yes. What do you think the biggest thing in technology, including seed technology that's sitting out there, farming practices, you know, we got a lot of different things that are coming out there. What excites you the most about, you know, what you see coming and what you see talked about?
Well, I think a couple things. One, in the genetics, gene editing, I think is going to be a big play. I think it will help take a little bit of pressure away from some of the trait hold that the companies might have on us. I'm looking forward to that. I'm an embracer of technology. I can't wait to have a truck that drives around by itself, because the truck drivers are hard hire for us. But there are just so many things, both in the physical stuff of the robots and the trucks and the tractors, and then the gene stuff. And I think we're just scratching the surface on the biologicals. I think, you know, that we're just learning about that. I think that's going to be a big play in the next 10, 15 years on how those biologicals work and how they can, might help to manufacture some nitrogen in corn, or, you know, maybe even bring some disease packages or insect packages through biologicals. So, you know, embracing the change and looking forward to all the opportunities that might be coming.
You know, it's funny. I had a chance the last couple of years to go to World Agritech in San Francisco. And I remember the first time I saw a car driving around with nobody in the driver's seat. I'm not sure I'm ready for a truck to be doing it hauling corn.
Don't they have driverless Ubers now?
They do.
Yeah.
I haven't been in one.
I'm not getting
it. I haven't been in one either.
It's bad enough that they got, you know, that we got autonomous tractors out there. You know, they're not just going to hit another car going down the road or a pedestrian or something.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. There's a lot of space to drive there.
Yeah. But all this kind of technology is going to be fun to see in the next 10, 15 years.
Yeah, definitely. No question. Tell you what, you know, and it's funny, of course, there's a lot of stuff going on that, and a lot of buzzwords, sustainability, regenerative agriculture, you know, where we're looking at climate smart, environmental stewardship, all of that happening. And there's been a lot of stuff. I mean, obviously, the current USDA has promoted a lot of climate smart grants that are sitting out there. And a lot of discussion that, if we see a change in administration, that we're going to see anything that starts with climate smart immediately go away. Well, before we get into the latter part, because I do have a question I'm going to ask you about politics here shortly. Yeah. But before we get to that, what do you think on this concept of regenerative practices, you know, and really getting into sustainability? Do you see a fit for it out there? And are you doing anything with your farmers to kind of encourage them to be able to take advantage of stuff like that? I mean, where do you see all of that coming out?
Well, I think part of it is politically driven and administrative driven, you know, that people kind of follow the money. You know, ultimately, You know, the carbon intensity scores, you know, those kind of things I think are good long term. It's just a question of how much value you can put on each one of those. And, you know, ultimately everybody wants to be sustainable and regenerative. It just, to me, it depends on what the payback is going to be for doing that. I mean, our farmers now, and they're not trying to not do that stuff. So, you know, but if they're not going to get rewarded for it in a, you know, in a something that pays them back, then that's going to be a slow road to get to where some people think we want to go.
And that's always kind of fit with me too. I mean, look, you know, I've always thought of farmers as being very strong conservationists, if you yes. want to put it. I mean, farmers have to make their living off the land. You know, so many times it's multi-generational. Farmers know that value. And, you know, there is a whole piece here that if we want to say, hey, look, we want you to change your practices to go this way, there has to be a financial reward and not a penalty at the end of the
day
for the farmer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed wholeheartedly.
Well, so let me pick on you about your family. I got to remember that there's a guy up there in North Dakota that was governor named Doug Bergman that sounded like he was about to be a VP pick and you know, on a vice presidential train. Tell me about that.
We're very proud of Doug. Yes, we are. You know, I think he would have made a great president. He would have made a great vice president. If Trump would happen to win, I think it would make a great Secretary of Energy or the Interior. You know, he's very smart. He thinks 10 years ahead. He's, you know, he's a good administrator. He's a good businessman. And, you know, I think we need more of those people in politics. We don't have enough of the businessmen, practical guys that just can look at something and have a reasonable solution. And, you know, as a governor, you need to get along with everybody to get stuff done. And, you know, our current, you know, in the Senate and the House, they don't have to get along and they don't try and get anything done. And so if we're going to move the country forward, we need more people like the Doug Bergmans of the world.
Wow. Very well said. Very well said. Doug would be proud of you. He should have put you on the road. He might still be in the running on that president or vice president. Well, let's see. I think there was one other thing that I did want to ask you about too. And how do you really see that you differentiate ProSeed versus your competitors, you know, in the region? And I mean, obviously, you don't have to pick on Carl or Terry or any of your good friends up there.
But you can.
You can.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are great competition, and it's good having them because they make you perform better. If you're not doing something, they're doing it better. You stretch to get better. You know, we just try and focus on ourselves and building great relationships with our customers. And I know they all can too, but so you just have to kind of pick your battles and do that. And, you know, often as regionals, we end up competing against ourselves when really the competition is, you know, the big guys that are selling the seed, not them. But, you know, as if you're in a retail elevator or something like that, they may be handling a couple of the major brands and then one of the regionals. So then you end up kind of competing against them. But I think we just try and focus on ourselves because really, you know, the other guys are just as good as we are. And we respect that, but, you know, we try and see if we can provide just a little bit better service, a little bit better value to our customers. And I know everybody's trying to do the same thing, but if you do that and you can treat your customers like their partners, you know, you're eventually going to win those ties out there. So, and we're happy to have the Terry Schultz of the world and the Carl Peterson of the world helping us be better at that.
Sure. Do you think that is an answer for independent seed companies competing against the national area to really focus on the service aspect of what they can bring to the table versus national brands?
Do you think yes, I mean,
is
you
that
know,
a way forward?
Yes, we have to, you know, we're more, you know, they see the huge picture. We can, you know, we can have a variety for two dealers and, you know, and bring them value. And then that two varieties might be better than the national brands one that they have to spread over four states. So we can pay attention to those details. And you know, they also don't have as many bodies rolling around. So, you know, we can kind of beat them to the punch, being nimble and quick. So, you know, we just try and focus on being better and providing best service. And if we're a good partner, then we think we'll get rewarded with some orders.
Well, that has certainly has been a lot large part of my position, is that farmers want good service, but at the same time, there's a whole bunch of farmers that want that independent buying experience where they know that they can talk to the top person real quickly if they have a problem, and things are going to get handled in a way that they can't see, you know, in a national brand so many times. And I think that's the stalwart of why independents are still a, you know, force in the marketplace.
Right. And, you know, and our, you know, our guys are in the communities, you know, we try and be active where we can. We try and support the local FFA, the local 4-H, the local fire department, you know, wherever we can. You know, some of our guys are members of those organizations or friends with those that do. So, you know, the more we can kind of get integrated into the communities where we do business, then we feel we got a stronger foothold than the majors do.
So right now, what would you say is the most important issue that you see before Proceed? And I will even say independent seed companies in general, because you've got a lot of friends, you're out there, you know what's going on. What do you think?
Well, I think it's competing against our partner Monsanto Bayer, and trying to differentiate that line of them being a good partner, because they, you know, as I said before, they don't have to go too far below their cost of production on traits and germplasm, and we're not making any money at all. So we think we can compete on a level playing field if we'd really like to have a level playing field. I guess that's our biggest concern. If we can have a level playing field, we can compete with anybody.
I think that's really well said, and certainly a lot of focus of you know, what we're thinking as well. I guess the last question I have for you is, Keith, you've been in it a while, your family's been in it a very long while. What is it that you would say to young people today coming into the agriculture business, looking at the seed business? What advice do you have for them?
Well, I really love the seed business because it's the start of everything. So, you know, the ag is a process, and of course we're providing value, but you know that it all starts with the seed. And goes from there. And I love agriculture because, you know, everybody has to eat. It's a noble profession. Everybody does eat every day, and it changes so much that it's fun. It keeps you sharp. So just the variety and the intellectual stimulation of being in agriculture is fun.
Well,
it's good for a lifetime.
It is good for a lifetime. Well, Keith, thank you very much for sharing some time with us and some words on your background. Got to tell you, really
You're
exciting.
Welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
It's really exciting. I had no idea. 118 years around. That's a big number and certainly worth celebrating. So thanks for joining us today, everybody. This has been another edition of Stock Talk. I'm Todd Martin with Catherine Franz and Keith Peltier of Proceed. Thanks,
everyone.
Thank you.